Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special simulcast of Freedom from Rejection, Truth Just Below the Surface in the Neil Haley Show. And I'm excited to welcome program Reverend Wynn Henderson, MD. Wynn, what's going on, man? How are you?
Well, I'm doing good, Neil. I'm ending up the series on wearing a face mask, a careful review of the evidence. This is part four. And if you've listened to the first three parts, you'll be in a good position to get the most out of the last part of this series. You can get those by looking at archives at www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com, spelling Libsyn, L-I-B as in boy, S-Y-N, no caps, no spaces. So, what about the harm from mask use? The information that is accumulating involves mask wearers within a COVID-19 environment and raises many concerns, especially regarding psychological damage, and especially to infants and children, with potentially catastrophic impacts on the cognitive development of children. This is even more critical in relation to children with special needs or who are on the autism spectrum, who need to be able to recognize facial expressions as part of their ongoing development. The accumulating evidence also suggests that prolonged mask use in children or adults can harm difficulty with breathing, inhalation of toxic substances such as microplastics and chlorine compounds located in the mask, sudden cardiac arrest, a reduction in blood oxygenation, also known as hypoxia, or an elevation in blood CO2, also known as hypercapnia. Psychological damage. N95 masks show a reduction in the PaO2 level, increases the respiratory rate, and increases the occurrence of chest discomfort and respiratory distress with prolonged use. Dizziness and lightheadedness, headaches, especially among healthcare workers, bacterial and mold buildup that can be inhaled, anxiety and sleep problems, behavioral disorders, and fear of contamination in children, deoxygenation during surgery, potentially life-threatening damage to the lungs. For example, Stanford engineers report that masks can make it much more difficult to breathe, estimating that N95 masks, as an example, reduce oxygen intake as much as 20% if worn for a prolonged period. As reported by Koops, facial skin infections, nose and throat and sinus infections, and a change in breathing patterns. The predominant conclusion is that face masks have a very important role in places such as hospitals, but there exists very little evidence of widespread benefit for members of the public, either adults or children, as well as evidence that masking is truly an ineffectual way to manage the pandemic-related spread of viral disease. As Colsto stated, it has become less about the science and more about politics and a symbol of solidarity. Our view is that masks, as they are worn now, and masks that are in use, offer zero protection. They can be viewed as ineffective, while others consider them as being better than nothing, but without evidence to support that view. Masks are not sealed properly to the face and do not effectively stop virus penetration. We state emphatically that public health policy, or any policy for that matter, must be undergirded by sound data and evidence. And as we have stated, the reality is that widespread use of masks is not supported by science, and in fact, just the opposite. The mask hysteria is driving unnecessary fear in the population and must end. Those who deliver statements relentlessly on the use of masks are doing so without the luxury of any credible evidence to support their views. They speak on the assumption or speculation and not on science. However, it is important to understand that as we await definitive research, given the situation and the desire to spread to high-risk persons like the elderly, when consistent social distancing is not possible, and out of an abundance of caution, face coverings amongst symptomatic individuals might reduce the spread of droplets with SARS-CoV-2 infection. This must also be considered when in a setting experiencing elevated transmission rates. Moreover, this is sensible to the degree that it does not support generalized mask wearing by the entire population. We urge always common sense, reasonable precautions be taken, and on an individual basis, as the case might be, with age and hazard targeted approach to reducing risk, always endeavoring to do our utmost in order to protect the high risk persons among us. It is very sensible that one would use a face mask when visiting an elderly person who is high risk, or even if the setting is controlled, such as a healthcare setting in a nursing home. This makes complete sense, even though, again, we know that the evidence does not support this notion. It is reasonable to be cautious, even in the light of limited or non-existent evidence, especially strong peer-reviewed evidence of effectiveness, and the increasing information suggesting that there's now evidence of harm relating to mask use over time. Situation by situation decisions can be made that depend on the risk at hand. The full context must be considered, but if you are adequately socially distanced, there is no reason to wear a mask. There is no evidence for this. Though we would also contend that one should wear a mask if that is what is expected, but adherence to meticulous hand hygiene and socially isolating the ill is probably more important. Danish reporting of a higher quality mask study on COVID and masks that were actually rejected or sidelined by top journals, including Lancet, New England Journal of Medicine, and JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, is alarming, if true, and suggests a pattern of politicalization of research and of the medical community, journal editors, and the peer reviewers. In closing, perhaps Enon Weiss, who is a U.S. military veteran who holds a degree in bioengineering from UC Berkeley, captures our current face mask calamity by reminding us how masks constrain our return to a more normal life. As outlandish as it might seem, could this be the aim of those using the pandemic for the purpose of advancing various political ideologies? Masking drives fear in the population and a perennial sense of illness that is crippling. As stated eloquently by Weiss, our universal use of unscientific face coverings is therefore closer to medieval superstition than it is to science, but many powerful institutions have too much political capital invested in the mask narrative at this point, so the dogma is perpetuated. This podcast seeks to examine the complete and most updated mask-related scientific evidence, along with anecdotal data and reports. Our current belief remains that asymptomatic individuals do not drive the pandemic, and that the time-tested method of Ignaz Philipp Semmelweis of washing hands remains the best established mechanism of limiting most microbial infections. People with symptomatic disease should not go to work. Unfortunately, since the economic downturn of 2008, the incidence of presenteeism has increased due to the fear of losing one's job if one does not show up to work, even if ill. This behavior has to be taken very seriously and must be stopped. We also agree with the words of Klompas in the New England Journal publication. What is clear, however, is that universal masking alone is not a panacea. A mask will not protect providers caring for a patient with acute COVID-19 if it is not accompanied by meticulous hand hygiene, eye protection, gloves, and a gown. A mask alone will not prevent healthcare workers with early COVID-19 from contaminating their hands and spreading the virus to patients and colleagues. In sum, when we look at the science, there is emerging and troubling evidence of harm from masks used in the absence of any benefits. This is also related to things as mundane as simple, incorrect use of masking, as well as the development of complacency that emerges due to mask use, and thus the relaxation of other mitigation steps, as well as mask contamination. We also cannot discount the possible harm to our immune system and general health from such constant and prolonged use of masks. Given we have never done this before, we are in uncharted territory, and especially so with the possible implications for our children. Their immune systems are still being developed, and we are forcing lockdowns, school closures, and masking on a developing child, and we have no prior experience on the subsequent outcomes pertaining to children's development, health, and well-being. Most discomforting is that those government bureaucrats in charge, and particularly the medical experts, continue to fail to admit that they were exceptionally incorrect with regard to most of what they have stated in terms of pandemic policies and response related to the COVID pandemic. They have harmed the very societies they are supposed to help protect. They have failed to look at the evidence and follow it, and continue to operate in an arbitrary, non-scientific, non-evidential informed manner. They attack, with the assistance of the mass media, those of us who question their policies and actions, despite the disastrous outcomes of those public health policies. Indeed, we are often blamed for the failures. We're called deniers or heretics, and crushing harms of all of their policies when it has actually been their illogical, unsound actions and recommendations that deserves public outcry. The contributing authors to this podcast in this series are Paul E. Alexander, Master of Science, PhD, McMaster University, and Guide Research Methods Group, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Howard Tenenbaum, DDS diplomat of Perio, PhD, FRCD, Center for Advanced Dental Research and Care, Mount Sinai Hospital and Facilities of Medicine and Dentistry, University of Toronto, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Ramian Osquai, MD, CEO, Vauxhall Cardiology, PC, Washington, D.C. Harvey Risch, MD, PhD, Yale School of Public Health, New Haven, Connecticut. Peter McCullough, MD, MPH, Baylor University Medical Center, Baylor Heart and Vascular Institute, Baylor Jack and Jane Hamilton Heart and Vascular Hospital, Dallas, Texas, and Nicholas E. Alexander. For myself and all these contributing authors, we hope that you have gotten some idea about the scientific basis for wearing a mask. And we've carefully reviewed the evidence and given our report. Looking forward to bringing you an updated mask program in the very near future. I have ordered some masks which, unlike cloth and surgical masks, can filter down to a third of a micron, which is the size of a COVID virus. So if my research turns out as I expect it to be, I'm going to be recommending these new masks to be well worn so that you can completely protect yourself and others from the virus. And Neil, that's my report. You can go to my podcast, www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com. Spell Libsyn, L-I-B as in boy, S-Y-N, no caps, no spaces. And try to get as many people as you know to listen to this this series, because it's critically important. Thanks, Neil.
Thinking about these things, when you talk about masks and why we're wearing them, it's probably in a lot of ways a situation where people won't practice social distancing, so you have to force them. But if all these effects were out there and told, maybe, just maybe, people would practice social distancing and not have to wear masks and just understand, you know, this is like forever cold and flu season, and that we don't know who's infected. So these are things to have conversations. And I think you brought that up at the end of this program of the series that really brings up really an interesting thing. Social distancing is much better than masks, but can people do it? Let's hope they can, right, Wynn?
Right, and come back to my podcast for this and other truth just below the surface, and look forward to a report on the new mask that actually can filter out the virus.
All right. That was Freedom from Addiction, Truth Just Below the Surface, and the Neil Haley Show. Take care, everyone.